It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our cannabis community chat. We've got Dr. Mitch on the Skype line. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day, thanks.
Oh, me too. It's a little cloudy out here in Portland, and we just got done with the Indo Expo last weekend, so recovering from after parties and the such, but recovering pretty well, I think, is going to be a good day. We've got all sorts of great things to bring up in today's segment, and I want to start with this. I was going to do the data mining segment on this, and then I decided, nope, let's talk about it with Dr. Mitch. The new Gallup poll shows 13% of Americans say they are using, current tense, marijuana, up from 7% back in 2013. Dr. Mitch, what do you make of these numbers?
In all honesty, I think it's probably always been 15%, and just people are getting more and more comfortable talking to a Gallup interviewer and saying, yes, indeed, I do enjoy the plant. But unfortunately, I'm worried that folks are going to say, look, marijuana use has doubled, when in fact, it's not really the case.
It's what we say a lot about a lot of these stats that we hear. Oh, there's more kids being reported to the emergency room, more dogs being reported to the vet. Yeah, being reported, because now you don't go to jail for reporting it. So that's what we think is going on here to some extent.
Oh, I mean, if you think of the old days about literally anything else that was a controversial behavior, and then when it lost some of its controversy, people were much more willing to admit to doing it. I think this is really, really the case with this as well.
How do these figures jibe with what we've heard regarding the use by young people remaining steady?
Well, what's curious to me is there was actually basically this unmatched count technique where people could say that they did something without actually having to confess to it. And we're finding that those are staying pretty steady. The use by young people staying steady seems pretty consistent with the idea that they've been kind of honest all along. There was actually some slight exaggeration. There were, you know, areas where it was kind of cool to say you'd smoked cannabis even if you hadn't. And so we're finally getting some of that impact to decrease. And then, I mean, I know it's a segue to the eighth graders in the medical cannabis states actually saying cannabis is more dangerous. I feel like the implications for those folks are really different for confessing to use compared to adults.
Yeah, that was this other study that came up that says that the passage of medical marijuana laws led to an increase in the youngest kids finding marijuana or perceiving marijuana to be harmful. Could that be they just now they understand it's a medicine and just medicines in general are things that kids aren't supposed to be around or just more education?
I think that's a reasonable explanation. I'm also curious. I wish that they could ask a little more detail on this, because I think perceptions of dependence for young people, which, you know, is a genuine issue, if that's what they're viewing the danger as, I'm not upset about this at all. And I certainly hope that folks who have been banging the drum repeatedly that medical marijuana laws are going to turn teens in the state into motivational zombies is clearly not an issue at all. In fact, I think that there's a nice potential buffer here with that association with medical use, as you mentioned.
We have a question from our live chat room that asks about a statement here. THC is a dopamine reuptake inhibitor. Is that a true statement?
A dopamine reuptake inhibitor?
Yeah.
No, there's a modest increase in dopamine release, but way downstream. So it's not like cocaine or Adderall or any of those drugs, but you do get a modest increase in dopamine release after exposure to THC, but it's extremely small.
Okay. Next, this study, I talked about it last week, and I found it to be confirmed a lot of things I've done through personal study, let's say, on the effects of marijuana versus booze on young people and sex. What did you get from this study that we didn't already know?
I mean, I gave Joey Palomar a ton of trouble about this, and he's a delightful guy. If you want to ask him personally on the show, I think he'd get a kick out of it. But they just did extensive interviews, really trying to get a feel for these subjective effects and how they differ. As you can imagine, Knight is not going to fund something like this anytime soon.
Yeah.
So I really got to hand it to him for not only being bold enough to actually gather these data, but to publish it in such a great journal.
Knight has just gotten around to allowing them to get volunteers for a PTSD study on veterans and medical marijuana. I don't see the college-age sex study coming anytime soon.
Sad but true.
You know, what I thought was interesting about the study is it really seemed to be much more anti-alcohol, if you're going to, you know, phrase it that way, I guess. But as far as, you know, if you're looking for a good sexual experience, stay away from alcohol and maybe take up the marijuana. Any chance that college kids are making that conscious choice?
I think there's definitely a subset. It's curious because the whole behavior of college students and sex actually seems to reflect how surprised they are that they're getting to have any.
Well, I think you just nailed my college experience. All right, let's get to this next study. More of a story that was in Alternate that, you know, we primarily focus on cannabis on this show, but there is a new sort of a revival of interest in psychedelic drugs, not just for their medical uses, but also for some spiritual enlightenment. What do you think about this? Is this the new tune in, turn in, drop out generation happening before our eyes?
What's curious is I attribute a lot of this to ayahuasca, that which you really didn't have in the 60s and 70s, and this notion that, hey, this is an opportunity to, in a very fixed, potentially safe setting, explore, you know, your perception of your own thoughts and feelings. And it seems like the negative consequences have been really small, in part because ayahuasca is hard to get and really demands a lot of the user. So you don't see people doing LSD and throwing up and having to really deal with some of the alternative physical effects. And so people who are into it are pretty committed to the whole idea. Roland Griffiths has also gathered a lot of data on this, suggesting that people really do say, hey, this is a spiritual experience. My student, though, one of my students basically has data suggesting that edibles are also pretty much in line with this. And we're waiting for Roland to publish his before we publish ours. But the big idea is, hey, we're open to these. We know how to do harm reduction if we set up a good set and setting for these hallucinogens. And people claim literally years later that they got a lot out of it.
Hmm. What do we know just basically on some of these hallucinogens and their known medicinal properties? I've heard things like, you know, MDMA for counseling and LSD for alcoholism, for instance.
It's funny because the ability to get those published has been so impaired, and being able to get large samples and approval from ethics boards has been just terrible. So Ibogaine for the opiate addicts has a compelling set of really effusive case studies, but we don't really have that randomized clinical trial that we need, in part because, you know, NIDA won't give the approval. IRBs at universities are afraid they'll lose their other funding if they, you know, let people lay this out. But we're seeing some pretty compelling evidence that MDMA can enhance empathy, would be potentially an ideal way to facilitate couples therapy, what a surprise, and that LSD and alcoholism goes all the way back to Tim Leary days, but a lot of folks really do attribute their essential decrease of alcohol consumption to a pretty, you know, heartfelt experience with this hallucinogen. I see no reason to put this aside. It doesn't have the addictive potential that, you know, even caffeine has. So we ought to take advantage of this any way we can.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how this gets expanded, pardon the pun, as we continue on. And maybe the relaxation of cannabis in its schedule and the further study on cannabis will help open the doors towards studying some of these other substances that are, as you say, non-toxic. There is no realistic LD50 for some of these substances, correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, let's talk about this. I brought this up on the show last week as well, and I was interested to talk to you about this, especially in your role on the Normal Board and how this affects cannabis consumers. But it's a ruling by OSHA, or a regulation that OSHA put together, the Occupational Safety Health Administration, on mandatory reporting of workplace injuries. And a little aside to that was, if you have a drug testing regime that might dissuade people from reporting, then you got to adjust your drug test regime. What does this mean for those of us who might have jobs where there's post-accident drug testing?
If I'm reading this correctly, they're essentially trying to loosen things up so that if there is post-accident drug testing, yeah, it does. It does have the potential to turn into a complaint against the employee, but if it looks like it's some kind of retaliation for reporting the accident, that OSHA will actually make it so that they'll investigate retaliation even if the employee doesn't complain about the retaliation.
Yeah.
So I think they're trying to get a feel for genuine accidents and for, you know, drug-related accidents, but they're also trying to make sure that folks don't have to feel like they're risking their job and their livelihood by doing so.
Yeah, I tried to find a number of sources on this, and this weekend I tried to talk to some of the HR professionals at the Indo Expo. That this was so new, they weren't even really up on it. But from what I was gathering on this, it seemed like if you're the guy who drives the forklift and runs over a guy's foot, you're going to get drug tested. But if you're the guy whose foot got ran over, then if there's a chance that drug testing looks like we're trying to, oh, we're going to get Bob because we know he's a stoner, but really Bob was just standing there and got his foot run over, maybe that's where this comes in. We'll see if we could find some HR experts to get on the show and talk about this, because it's fascinating to me.
I appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah, let's wind things up here real quickly. A Seattle bar, this is just in the news, is offering customers these date rape drug testing kits. Real quick, this is just a really good harm reduction idea I thought I'd get your input on.
It's funny because these have been out since at least the early 90s, and I'm dying to see these get more accessible. A lot of the women in college age seemed kind of apprehensive about using them or carrying them around or anything like that. So I'm hoping that these will be a little more subtle, something you could do without seeming like you're accusing the guy who just bought you a drink of being a rapist. And I think the potential is really strong here. So I hope this becomes a big trend.
All right. Dr. Mitch is the host of Burning Issues here on CannabisRadio.com. Make sure to check that podcast out. And if you want to get your questions answered in a private sort of way, you can do so through email. Just send an email to 420research@gmail.com. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us again, and we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you then.
All right, stay tuned. We got more from the Indo Expo coming up next. Ever wonder what it's like to be a professional marijuana strain reviewer? We speak to one. Soham is his name, from The Cannabist.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.